Housing affordability in Maine. Whether you are looking to buy a home or rent an apartment, the story is similar. Prices are rising and increasingly becoming out of reach for many people in Maine. And it's not just in the Portland area. The statewide median home price in Maine went up 9.5% from November 2017 to November 2018. The biggest bump happened in Knox County. And as for rentals, the National Low Income Housing Coalition says Maine is among the least affordable places to rent in the nation. Its report looked at the gap between the average renter's wage and what was needed to afford a two-bedroom apartment, and Maine came out ninth worst. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today, we'll discuss strategies if you're looking to buy your first-time home or need help with the rent, and we'll discuss possible solutions to this housing crunch. Maine Calling is next, but first, this news. From the Maine Public Radio studios, I'm Jennifer Rooks, and this is Maine Calling. As many people know, buying or renting a home can be challenging, and especially right now. Our panel of experts today will explain what makes housing affordability such a difficult issue here in Maine, and they'll offer some possible solutions. Joining me in the studio, Denise Lord, who is Senior Director of Communications and Planning with the Maine State Housing Authority. Mary Miller is a vice president with Androscoggin Bank, and Aaron Oldham is a realtor with Vitalius Real Estate Group based in Portland. Thanks to all of you for joining us today. And as always, we want to hear from you and the audience. Have you had trouble finding a home you can afford? Our phone number, 1-800-399-3566. You can send a brief email to talk@mainpublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post to our Facebook page. Denise, in doing a little research for today's program, I see that Maine Housing turns 50 this year, founded in 1969. I'm wondering, in those years, in the time since Maine Housing was founded, how has the situation changed? It feels as though we're in a really tight market where it's unaffordable for many people not only to buy a home but rent a home. Has it been like that a long time, or indeed is this the worst it's been in a long time?
I think it's certainly more challenging today than it has been in the past. When Maine Housing was first established, the quality of housing was the primary concern, blight, rundown housing, and old housing stock. Today, we're challenged with issues of affordability. Can we afford to buy a home? Can we afford to rent that apartment?
Are there places in Maine? I mean, the greater Portland area is getting a lot of attention, especially the Portland Peninsula. But are there other pockets in Maine that are incredibly hard to find affordable housing?
Yes. Predominantly the coastal counties, the I-95 corridor, the coastal counties in southern Maine are the most challenging.
All right. What are you seeing in Androscoggin County?
We're definitely seeing the effects in Androscoggin County as well. The housing stock there is a little less rehabbed than it is in the Portland area. So there's a challenge that Denise alluded to, defining housing stock that's not only affordable, but doesn't require a lot of extra money and work after the purchase is finalized.
Right. So somebody can't just barely afford somewhere, especially a house, because they're going to need to fix it up.
Correct. Yes. That's a part of the puzzle that some first-time home buyers, or even more than first-time home buyers, don't normally take into account.
Aaron, and I see you nodding over there. This is an issue that's coming up more and more frequently, isn't it?
I think that conversation that a buyer needs to have is, does it make sense to keep renting or does it make sense to buy? And that's a very nuanced, detailed discussion, because it is, once, even if you're, let's say you're pre-approved for $200,000, that's a pretty common level I see. It's pretty challenging. You have to go pretty far outside of Portland if you want to even get in the market. But then you need to take into account the maintenance of the home, cost of actually owning a home versus renting. And somebody who's pre-approved for $200,000 doesn't typically have a lot of extra money to maintain a home. So you just have to be careful as you get into the market.
If they need a new furnace, if they need
exactly.
A new roof, they need to be able to find a way to afford that. Has the calculation with the rising rents in many places, like you said, Portland and then up the coast and then in some of the vacation communities and sort of western Maine and the Moosehead region, as those housing prices have gone up, has the sort of calculation changed between who might be a renter and who might be a buyer?
I think that we're seeing some of the rents level off a bit in Portland. And so I think the calculus is changing for lots of people. So it's changing for investors as they come in. So if rents are not going to keep increasing, then they may not be willing to pay as much for a multi-unit, for instance. And then also for people who live here and are renting, they may, if their rent's going to level off, they may decide, okay, I'm going to stick with this because the prices of homes. In the last year in Portland alone, 11% increase, but all around the state, about 9 to 11%, even 12%. I was looking at Auburn this morning. You know, there's increases around the state, so it's a different calculation right now.
Sure. I'm looking right here at a press release from, is it pronounced Merida? And looking at the 1 year price increase of homes in Maine, statewide 9.5%, but Knox County 22.9% rise in home prices, Franklin County 15.3%, Washington County 19.57%. Now, homes in Washington County are starting at a much lower place, 115,000 to 137,000, but Washington County also has low incomes. And that's the issue, isn't it?
It is, and actually, since the housing recession, we've been seeing a shift to renting, that the growth in home ownership had declined. We're beginning to see more interest now in home buying. The difficulty is we don't have a supply in the right places, which is what is driving up those prices.
And what are the right places?
The ones that you just described, the coastal counties, southern Maine, the Portland area.
Tell me about some of the programs available to someone whose income doesn't match the rental market or the home buying market in their community. If someone has a job that pays them $20,000 a year and needs a place to live, where do they start?
Well, if a person is interested in purchasing a home, becoming a home buyer, and they have not owned a home previously, Maine Housing does have a first home loan program, which is available. It's below market rates, and there's a $3,500 down payment assistance. So if someone is interested in purchasing a home, the first home loan program is an option for them. They should check out our homepage. We have over 40 lenders that we work with. The other thing I would recommend if someone is interested in buying a home is taking a homeworks class. That is probably the best preparation for home ownership. It will help you determine what your budget, what your financing, what your maintenance obligations will be, and will help you make that decision about whether you're ready and what kind of home you can afford.
And what about for renters? What's available?
For rental assistance, there are subsidized rentals available, both multifamily and single market rentals, private landlords. Unfortunately, those are not growing fast enough to meet the demand. And I think that's, again, one of the challenges we're confronting is building a rental market sufficient to meet the demand.
Mary, I'm guessing that Androscoggin Bank probably works with developers as well as homeowners. And I'm wondering what you're hearing from them. What is the situation in terms of trying to develop affordable housing in Maine?
Well, developing affordable housing really is not just a Maine issue. It's a national issue. And so across the country, the challenges are that there has in the past been some stigma with regard to putting affordable housing into a community for those who already live there. There's some stigma associated that these are lower income people that are going to come into the neighborhood and cause problems, which is not the case. Most of our first time home buyers are students who come out of college with student loan debt every month that exceeds some people's housing expense. So, you know, it's critical that we have communities that understand that these developers are willing to do this. The other piece that's really important is that the developers right now, with what's been going on in the state in terms of redevelopment and construction, is that it's tempting and more lucrative for them to build something higher end than it is to build the first-time home buyer stock. So there's the challenge that exists.
So how do we change that?
Well, we have to partner together. There are a lot of housing agencies that places like Maine Housing that will do things to, you know, if we work together, then we can make sure that there's enough affordable housing stock. But it also involves bringing in your community people that run things and can help us to identify areas where it's needed and then help us to get the permits and other items that we need in order to get started.
Are there any projects you'd like to talk about, any of you that have been working, are examples of how a community has come together to develop affordable housing successfully?
Well, I think there are scores of examples throughout the state. Almost every large community has an affordable housing development. We have 21 public housing agencies in the state that have been developing housing, whether it's Bath, Brunswick, Portland, South Portland, York County. So I think we have lots of examples we can point to. And as Mary indicated, what's important is that the housing that we're developing, that we're financing, is housing that fits in the community. So there is the stigma, the concern about these are low-income people. Most of the affordable housing projects are actually mixed income. And some of the residents there are teachers and nurses and people who work in the community. So I think I could give you many examples, but in virtually every major community, there's an affordable housing project.
And I think I end up working more one-on-one with people to determine whether they can afford something. And so it's really going through and having that in-depth conversation about where they're starting. And one thing I wanted to mention was about right now, subsidized housing rates for Section 8, for example, for a three-bedroom, are actually higher than market rents. Because Portland rents have stabilized, the subsidized housing rates, for example, for a three-bedroom is $1,769 versus the market rate is $1,565. So people with those subsidized housing actually should be able to find more rentals out there. And just anecdotally, just knowing people who own lots of different apartments, there are vacancies. And so they're finding they can't rent for as high. So hopefully people should be able to get into some of those affordable rentals.
So you're hopeful sort of that the worst has passed, at least in the greater Portland area?
I looked over the last 2 years, I looked quarter by quarter how prices are doing. And I did see in the last quarter of 2018 a decrease in prices and a decrease in the number of units selling. You know, that's mainly looking in the greater Portland area. So that I'm personally, because I have an interest in, yes, people buying houses, but I also do think that when we have a median income of $72,000 in Maine, you know, we can't, like we've seen 9%, then a 9%, and then 11% increases in housing prices over the last 3 years. And I don't think that's necessarily healthy for a market to keep just going up and up, because it leaves a huge gap in where people, how people can afford a home. So I do hope that that levels off.
I'm going to go to Craig, who's calling from Lewiston. Craig, you're calling in from an organization that works on these issues.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for having me. I work for the Raise Up Housing Cooperative in downtown Lewiston. We're in the Tree Street neighborhood on Pearson Maple Street, and I'm also a resident. And we're an affordable housing organization that we're entirely owned by our residents, and we're also democratically managed by our 50 residents. And we developed it, you know, as a solution. I think, Jennifer, you called for stories about people having trouble finding affordable housing. Many of our residents were. And not just housing that was affordable, but housing that was also in decent condition and where they felt safe, you know, being able to address grievances or know their neighbors. And so that's why we formed our organization.
So, Craig, what is your model? How does it work?
Each household has one member that owns a share of stock in the cooperative. And they still lease their unit. So it's not a condominium. They lease their apartment from the co-op. The co-op owns the property, but the residents, they elect the board of directors. They serve on the board of directors. They pay a monthly carrying charge that covers most of the housing costs, includes heat, hot water, taxes, insurance, all of that. We do everything we can to, we don't subsidize the rent, but we raise money to pay for many of the capital costs to make it affordable. And then what keeps the rent down is the amount of work that residents are willing to put in. They guide the decisions in terms of prioritizing maintenance issues. And they decide what that balance is between affordability and quality of life for their families.
And are all these homes in the same neighborhood, in the same building? How does that work?
We have three different apartment buildings. They're all within just about a 3-minute walk of each other. We have two buildings that are each 3 units, and then we have a third building that is 9 units. And the board of directors is making the big picture decisions about growth. Right now, we're hoping to double our size over the next 3 to 5 years. They supervise staff, but each building meets as a local building to set their operating budget for the next year. Again, make improvement and maintenance decisions. They can take on special projects, if they want to develop something that isn't there, like a garden, or if they want to do a community project. Two community projects we did recently was a community vegetable garden that's not just for our residents, but other residents in the neighborhood, as well as a community art project.
Wow.
It's basically like a little dog park. And, we surveyed our neighbors to figure out what was missing from the neighborhood and did that as a way to enhance life in the downtown.
Well, Craig, thank you so much for calling in. And I invite you to put more information on the Maine Calling Facebook page about the Raise Op Housing Cooperative in Lewiston. Thanks for your call. And Denise, I noticed you nodding. An example of some of the innovative solutions around the state. What other innovative solutions are you seeing?
Well, I think Craig raises a very good point, and that is how do we reduce the cost of housing? How do we make new housing more affordable to Maine residents? And we're seeing people interested in the Mid-Coast area. We're working with Habitat for Humanity, where we're developing a subdivision of single-family homes where people will be putting their own equity using the Habitat for Humanity model. So that's another example, much like Raise Up, where people put in their own equity, sweat equity, in order to reduce the costs of housing. I think people are looking for smaller, more energy-efficient housing. So I think there's been a growth in housing design around that, those principles. So I think we're going to be seeing, the whole interest in smaller homes, tiny homes, however you want to describe them, I think is symptomatic of the fact that people are looking for more affordable options.
Are towns going to have to look differently at their zoning?
Well, yes, most definitely. When 30, 40, 50 years ago, Maine was growing, our population was expanding, and a lot of the policy discussions that were happening at the local level were around single-family developments and maintaining community character and retaining the rural nature of the community. Today, I think we're looking at a very different conversation at the community level. We're looking at how do we build in our communities? Because the cost of infrastructure, the cost of transportation are pushing people to live in more compact housing. We're seeing an interest in, as Craig said, co-op housing, in shared housing. So all those models really force us to look at zoning at the community level differently.
All right. Well, we are going to take a quick break. When we come back, your comments and questions. We're talking about housing affordability. This is Maine Calling. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as do Lamy Wellahan, a Maine family-owned shoe store since 1914, committed to keeping the entire family comfortable, healthy, warm, and dry. And Salt Pump Climbing Company, helping to mentor the next generation of vertical athletes. Youth program information at saltpumpclimbing.com.
When it comes to the government shutdown, Democrats and Republicans are talking past each other.
A wall is an immorality. It's not who we are as a nation.
This is national security we're talking about. We're not talking about games.
I'm Audie Cornish. The latest on the shutdown as it enters its third week. This afternoon on All Things Considered from NPR News.
Join us for All Things Considered from 4 to 6:30 each weekday evening here on Maine Public Radio. The Maine Public Classical Holiday Stream is still rejoicing and keeping the holiday spirit alive. You can hear it online at mainepublic.org until the middle of January. In addition, In Tune with Sarah Willis is also very active, 24/7, and will be going forward. If you've found yourself waiting to hear Sarah and the music she brings us, now she's waiting for you, anytime, anywhere. To hear our streams, including Maine Public Radio and Maine Public Classical, visit mainepublic.org and click on Listen Live.
Welcome back. This is Maine Calling. I'm Jennifer Rooks. Today on the program, housing affordability in Maine. Joining me, Mary Miller, who's vice president with Androscoggin Bank, Erin Oldham, she's a realtor with Vitalius Real Estate Group, and Denise Lord, senior director of communications and planning with Maine Housing. We invite you to join the conversation. Call 1-800-399-3566. 1-800-399-3566. Send a brief email to talk@mainepublic.org, tweet at Maine Calling, or post on our Facebook page. Joining us on the line now, Greg Payne. He is the director of the Maine Affordable Housing Coalition. Thanks for joining us, Greg. And tell us what the Maine Affordable Housing Coalition does.
Hi, thanks, Jennifer, for having me. The coalition is made up of about 135 companies and organizations around the state that have some role in addressing Maine's housing problems, and that ranges from shelter and service providers to housing developers to architects and engineers and builders and government entities and bankers and investors, folks who really want to help state legislators and members of Congress understand what's happening on the ground and what they can do to help.
What have you found are the most common obstacles to someone being able to afford a home? Is it simply salary?
Yeah, I think, big picture, this issue kind of fundamentally boils down to the fact that the housing that exists simply does not match the incomes that people have. And particularly when you're talking about low-income renters, the market simply does not provide opportunities for people to have a basic home that they can be safe in and that they can afford. And obviously, there's significant repercussions when people lack something so basic.
Offer up a couple of suggestions for us, if you can, where someone should start if they're having trouble finding affordable housing.
Well, unfortunately, there's a whole lot of people that are having trouble finding, especially the affordable rental housing that is the bulk of the work that we do. I think people clearly want to be reaching out to local housing providers who build affordable homes and to housing authorities that have access to federal rental assistance. Unfortunately, what they're going to find is very long waiting lists. I think the housing authorities now have 17,000 households statewide waiting for federal Section 8 vouchers. Housing providers generally build housing as fast as they can with the limited resources that are available. But what you have are waiting lists that, stretch anywhere from months to many years, depending on the resources that a renter might bring to the table. So I think there are some housing opportunities out there. They don't nearly match the demand. And so, unfortunately, we're in this place where the best people can do is make sure their names are on the lists and help make the case for a stronger production levels.
Well, Greg, thank you for joining us today. Greg Payne, the director of the Maine Affordable Housing Coalition. Denise, if you could wave a magic wand and make something happen in Maine, what would you like to see happen?
Well, I think the solution is multiple happenings. I think if we have a number of programs that are working very well, and as Greg has suggested, there just aren't enough resources. So one of the challenges for us is to find either use those resources as wisely as we can, or to find other lower cost options. So I think we need to continue to finance multifamily housing in order to provide affordable rents to people. I think we have an opportunity through the housing bond, which we're hopeful Governor Mills will be signing soon, that will increase production. So that is one very valuable addition. We also have the real estate transfer tax, which comes to Maine Housing to help subsidize both single-family and multifamily housing. And that transfer tax has been growing with the resurgence of home buying and real estate transactions. And it is also coming to Maine Housing 100% of what is entitled to Maine Housing. So having that resource is a tremendous asset. And one of the things I would urge people to do is to continue to safeguard that, because it is a matter of resources.
Okay. And Mary, this is part of a a broader economic issue in Maine, isn't it? I mean, if Maine's companies are going to find the workforce that they need as people retire, there needs to be some place for young people to live.
That's true. And employers, and especially in this particular economy, are struggling to find qualified workers to come and work for them. And then when they, you know, present the salary structure, is there some place that those people can then live and get to work in a reasonable amount of time? You know, I think of the Portland market where there's a lot of higher paying jobs, perhaps, than the rest of the area or the coastal areas or some of the vacation spots. But the people who work for that don't make enough to live where they are working. So how far do they have to drive? How much does that mean they're going to spend on their car insurance and their gas and car repairs, et cetera? So there's a lot. It's like, as Denise said, it's a very multifaceted problem that sort of trickles all the way across things. I think another thing that complicates that for young people coming in to live here is that we're seeing an influx of those coming here to retire and enjoy our beautiful state. And that certainly puts competition against those who are trying to get into their first homes.
Sure, especially those who are moving from someplace even more expensive than Maine. Mm-hmm. If you're selling a house in Connecticut outside of New York or the greater Boston area, believe it or not, what's things are selling for in Maine might seem inexpensive.
That's absolutely right. And that will price others out of the market. Because if I'm a retiree and I think that $450,000 for that single family is a great deal, now I have a family with a mom and a dad and a little kid and daycare bills, and they can't afford $450,000.
Okay, I'm going to go to Alan calling from Augusta. Hi, Alan. Go ahead.
Hi. Thanks for taking my call. I'm the Maine chapter representative for the American Tiny House Association, and I'd just like to ask that municipal leaders start thinking outside of the box and asking why it is that they have certain regulations and minimums. So, for example, minimum square foot requirement for a residence or minimum lot size. Right now, the plumbing code says that you need to have 5 fixtures inside a single family residence. But in a tiny house, that doesn't apply. Now, tiny houses, for sure, are not for everyone, but they are extremely affordable. And I think the solution to affordable housing is building an affordable house.
All right. Well, Alan, thanks for calling. And I'm wondering, from you, Aaron, do you have people who are clients who are interested in a tiny house and having trouble figuring out how to make that happen?
It's very common, actually. I think it's become a dream of a lot of people to have that tiny house. But as Alan said, it's really challenging to find a place where you can, even if you purchase a tiny house, where can you put it? Or how can you find a lot where you're allowed to build it? I've had a couple people approach it and actually not been able to follow through with it. So I would love to see people also look into those regulations and decide.
Is it that community zoning regulations just sort of aren't up with the times? Or is there a reason that regulations make it so difficult to put a tiny house into a community?
I'm sure there's different interests at play. You know, people are concerned about fire code and concerned about safety. People may have a vision like, what happens if we allow tiny houses? Then there'll be all these tiny houses together. But I do think it's bringing the different parties to communicate and figure out if there is a viable solution. Because they're really, I think what we're hearing is that there really are not options for people who don't have at least $250,000, $300,000 to get into this market. And I think tiny houses would be an interesting solution.
Alan, thanks so much for your call. I'm going to go to McGinley calling from Lubec. Hi, go ahead.
Hey, guys. So I have two big separate comments to make. One is, I bought an old farmhouse, remember the days of this old house, and I had my homeowners cancel. At the same time I had my homeowners cancel, six other friends of mine had their homeowners canceled because their houses needed work. So there's something going on with the insurance companies where they're culling people who are buying old houses. Either you have enough money up front to fix them up, or they'll cancel your homeowners. But if you get your homeowners canceled, your mortgage is canceled. So it's a catch-22. So someone, hopefully this new government will look into it. But that's one point. The other point is, in coastal Maine, as was mentioned before, there is no affordable housing. All kinds of people. I've lived in Lubec. I moved up from Bowdoin, Maine. I've lived in Lubec 20 years. our whole town has suddenly in 20 years become seasonal. It was a year-round town. Now it's seasonal because people are buying it and making houses seasonal rentals. So they're only used 2 or 3 months a year, and the locals have no place to live. So my husband and I are putting 2 tiny studio apartments upstairs in the building we bought to run our business. We're paying for it out of our own pocket because one friend moved to Alaska. Another friend killed herself when her house she was staying in went up for sale, and she had no other place to live. And when you're 50, 60, you have no savings. You've lived hand to mouth your whole life, and the rents are now $800, $900 a month plus utilities. There's no way making $10 an hour or $15 that you can afford that. And so, you know, I'm wondering if we can put it out there so that you guys maybe can put the contact information out there for people like my husband and I. We're willing to spend our own money to make some sort of affordable housing for our community members. And, you know, any assistance would be greatly appreciated, but...
Sure, McGinley, I think you've brought up so many points, and I want to try to remember them all and get to all of them. We'll start with the last one, and I'll turn to you, Denise. If someone is in their community trying to create some affordable housing, is there help for them? She said, want to make 2 studio apartments in a building they own.
For those types of renovations or developments for rental housing, that has really been traditionally managed by the private banking market. Our programs are really designed at larger scale developments. Mm. So maybe Mary could better answer that question.
Yeah, Mary, is that something, do you have people coming to you saying, I want to do something not just for profit, but to help my community?
That hasn't been something that we've seen to date. However, most banks will give you a loan on your home. You could take out a home equity line of credit to do something of that nature. You could refinance your existing mortgage to do that as well. And it's, you know, it really is something to be commended that someone who's lived in the community for that length of time wants to do something for their fellow community members.
What about the first point she brought up, that's hearing insurance companies canceling homeowners insurance when a home needs repair? Are these stories that you all are hearing as well? And is this a trend?
I have heard those stories recently. And I don't know why there's all of a sudden a larger number of them, but they do come around. They take a look at your house. If there are things about it that they feel would make it more of a risk to the insurance company, then they cancel the policy for your house not being in good repair. And when that happens, if you do have a mortgage, then the bank has to step in and force place insurance coverage for you, which is prohibitively expensive and can ultimately make that home then not affordable for you.
All right. And the last point I think McGinley made was the impact of the increase in seasonal homes on the overall real estate market. Are you seeing that, Erin?
Yeah, I think that is a frustration. While the people who are currently living outside of Maine are reading in the New York Times what a fabulous place Portland is, they're coming up here and they're buying high-end condos on the East End or on the coastal communities. I think it is a common frustration that then it is turning some areas into more of a seasonal when people are only using that condo for 2 to 3 months of the year.
Is there anywhere else in the country that's balancing that in a way to help any other vacation area that is finding a way to help its residents?
Well, I know I recently relocated back to Maine, and I had previously been living in Massachusetts on Cape Cod. And one of the things that was done down there, it's obviously a very seasonal area, is that a lot of the homeowners would rent their properties as, quote, a winter rental, which would be a much lower rent number, and it would go from Labor Day to Memorial Day. The problem then is you have people who are kicked out of these homes for the summer. Where do they go? So there are some creative things that can keep some of that done, but you know, it's definitely something I've not seen handled well anywhere.
All right. Well, thank you, McGinley, for bringing that up. We'll go to Grayson calling in Portland. Hi, Grayson. Go ahead.
Hey, thanks for taking my call. Actually, that's an interesting segue because my question has to do with Cape Cod. So I heard that Provincetown, Massachusetts levied a tax on people buying second and third homes, you know, just for seasonal stuff to, and then they use that money to build affordable housing. So I'm wondering if that's feasible in Maine.
It definitely is the practice on Cape Cod, Grayson, to charge homeowners that are not occupying their property year-round a higher tax rate than those who do. That would be something that each town would have to consider and decide whether or not they wanted to approve.
Grayson, thanks for your call. Our phone number, we're talking about affordable housing, 1-800-399-3566. Again, 1-800-399-3566. You can send an email to talk@mainepublic.org. Please keep it brief. We'll be right back.
You make Maine Calling possible, as does Evergreen Home Performance, helping homeowners address climate change with energy audits, window replacement, and insulation. More at evergreenyourhome.com.
On the next Fresh Air, the consequences of a childbirth injury. Pain, secrecy, and a medical community that didn't know how to treat it. Terry speaks with Hillary Frank, creator of the award-winning parenting podcast, The Longest Shortest Time. Her pain and isolation led her to start the podcast. Her new book, Weird Parenting Win, includes some of its stories. Join us.
Join us for Fresh Air this evening at 7 o'clock.
Later today on This American Life, there's this border wall in Africa that's more like an obstacle course than a wall, really. It's created what seems like a bizarre and pretty dangerous sport, where people on the African side get together in big groups and basically rush this obstacle course, storm it, all trying to get over it once, any way they can. People spend years trying. One guy tells us what that's like later today.
That's coming up this evening at 11 o'clock. And coming up in just a few minutes at 2 o'clock, we'll have World Affairs. Today's program is Brexit, the Politics of Pain. That's World Affairs coming up at 2 o'clock right here on Maine Public Radio.
Welcome back. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you're listening to Maine Calling. Today on the program, Housing in Maine and How to Make It Affordable. My guests are Aaron Oldham with Vitalius Real Estate, Denise Lord with Maine Housing, and Mary Miller with Androscoggin Bank. If you'd like to join our conversation, our phone number 1-800-399-3566. An email from Nancy, who's with the Waterville Community Land Trust. She says, affordable homes are being developed by community land trusts. We work to change lives by helping people become homeowners rather than renting. There are three CLTs in Maine, Waterville, Covenant, and Greater Portland, working together to develop a program in Maine for homeownership. We'd like to find a way to participate with state and federal resources that currently develop primary rentals, as happens with most of the other 260 CLTs across this country. You're nodding, Denise. You're familiar with CLTs.
I am, and I think they're another great example of a different way of delivering affordable housing. So I think Maine Housing is open to those ideas, and I would welcome Nancy to reach out to us, or if you have her contact information, I can reach out to her.
All right, an email from Alice. It took me 3 months to find an affordable one-bedroom in the Portland area. I found a rental in Yarmouth. It's still a stretch given my income. So an example of what we're talking about today. An email from Joan. First and foremost, let me say, I'm an enthusiastic supporter of subsidized housing for the elderly and disabled. Here in Augusta, we've done really well between the Coney Flatiron, Hodgkins Junior High, Kennebec Plaza, and other excellent projects. But in Augusta, there seems to be appropriate housing for the very well-off and those at various levels of poverty. My partner and I are modestly middle income, approaching 70, and increasingly less able to take care of our modest single-family home and yard. But our income is just a bit too high for us to qualify for any of Maine's affordable housing. And there's no decent condo or apartment complex in the area that offers reasonable amenities, safety, and the comfort for the large portion of the income spectrum of which we're a part. It is incredibly frustrating. Is this story, Joan's story, a very common story?
It is. I mean, I think the marketplace is very difficult for people of moderate income. I think we've talked a little bit about it today. For those people to access, I would encourage some of the projects she identified in Augusta may have market rates or may go up a little in the income eligibility. So I would encourage her to not give up and to seek those out. Another option might be, if she wishes to stay in her home, is a home modification where we have home repair and modification services that could make the home habitable, weatherize it. Maine is a cold state, And our weatherization services mean a lot in terms of making an existing structure comfortable to live in. So that might be another alternative.
An email from Bobby. Are there any statistics about who is buying the 400,000 to 700,000 condos and small houses that make up the bulk of listings in Portland? So many of these properties only have one or two bedrooms. I try to think of what high-paying occupations exist in the area that could support these purchases, but I'd imagine that most young doctors and lawyers in the area would be loaded up with student loans. Sort of a mystery to me.
What I'm seeing, I don't have statistics on exactly who, but I can tell you my experience. My experience is, for instance, I'm working with people from Texas, Rhode Island, Connecticut, people coming up from Brooklyn, from Boston currently, who are all coming into Portland because they've heard great things. They've been coming up here for years, and they finally want to either move up here or get a condo up here. So that it really, what people hear, that it is people from out of town, it is partly that group. It's also people who are currently living out in Falmouth and Yarmouth, Cape Elizabeth, and they want to move closer to Portland to be walkable to our restaurants. So they're moving. Some people are moving in and downsizing.
So it's empty nesters.
Empty nesters, mostly, or people moving across town. I've also seen people from the people moving from the West End to the East End, selling big houses, 3,000 square foot houses on the West End, and wanting to sort of downsize, although not in price, only in size, you know, over to other parts of Portland.
Susan on Facebook, zoning that allows for smaller lot sizes in a densely developed part of a town can allow a homeowner to spin off a lot, provide a lot for a smaller home, the trend in construction, to create housing appropriate for the workforce and empty nesters downsizing. Rockland is discussing this right now. So one community discussing changing zoning to make room for smaller houses and smaller lots. We'll go to Danielle, who's calling from Millbridge. Hi, Danielle. Go ahead.
Hi. It's an interesting program. Thanks for taking my call. I wanted to talk about a couple of things dealing with housing for the homeless, because what has been found is that if homeless people can get stabilized in a small domicile, other problems like being able to hold a job, dealing with addiction or mental health issues is made much, much easier. So the two points I wanted to make are that in at least a couple of major cities, and I think one of them is either Portland, Oregon, or Seattle, Washington, they've had great success with areas with tiny houses, specifically to house homeless people and help them get on their feet. The other thing is that I just came across something this morning to the effect that some of the abandoned shopping malls are now being repurposed inside for housing for the homeless. I don't have a lot of detail, but the person who posted it on Facebook said that it's her understanding this is being done with part of the main mall in Bangor that has gone empty.
All right. Well, Danielle, thanks for your call. Is this something you know about, Denise?
Well, the tiny home project, the homeless project that she's referring to in Rockland, actually that's a partnership with Habitat for Humanity and the Knox County Shelter. We financed the smaller home portion of that development as a pilot, so it's Maine Housing's first foray into developing smaller homes. And so we're very excited by it and very anxious to see it up and people living in it.
All right. Well, Danielle, thanks for your call. We'll go to Bill, who's calling from Cranberry Island. Hi, Bill. Go ahead.
Hi there. Good afternoon. I've been listening to the program for the last 10 or 15 minutes. And the problems that your callers discuss are the ones that we have here, especially the properties going from year-round occupation by local families to summer homes. Our realty trust is small. We've been in operating for about 20 years, and we currently have five homes that are owned by the trust that we make available to people at what we consider to be a fair and affordable rent. I don't have any particular suggestion how to replicate this. It's been around for a long time. Our homes came from donations, fundraising, and the money that we've been able to put aside. But I recommend the possibility of creating a local housing trust if there are homes on the market that could be purchased and made available for.
Bill, thank you. You're starting to break up, but the idea of a housing trust, is this something in any of the three of you have been involved in?
I haven't seen that sort of thing, but I've seen it where there's a trust that's set up by the community, and they do that. They will come and buy a house at market value and then put it back on the market affordable with a deed restriction that would keep someone from being able – that they have to then sell it again to someone who's also income eligible for the house.
All right. Well, Bill, thank you for your call. Marty on Facebook writes, micro apartments are sort of an extension of the co-working trend. They reduce costs in return for community spaces. Any micro apartment projects underway in Maine that we know of? It sounds like a big city, sort of Tokyo, Japan, or New York City kind of solution there. And then let's see, an email from Corrine. She says, elsewhere, many live in trailers. Too cold here, I think. There's a great supply of obsolete factory buildings to convert into mixed income housing in cooperative or condo ownership. And Denise, I will turn to you because all over the state, I know that a lot of different organizations are working on turning old mill buildings into housing, but that can be a really expensive proposition, can't it?
It can. Typically, the cost of acquisition and rehabbing an existing building are a little higher than new construction, but they're usually very well sited. They're part of the community, and the community support for reusing the building is typically very strong. A previous caller listed three projects in Augusta, which were schools, an old city hall, that were repurposed as low to moderate income rental housing. There, as I say, there are countless examples across the state. And while the cost is a little bit higher, they're well sited. They're close to services. They're usually close to public transportation, and they retain a part of the community. So they're a fabulous example.
Go ahead.
Just some examples in Portland where developers are trying to make affordable housing. So there's Paris Terraces, so on Paris Street, where they have one-bedroom condos that they're selling, but there is income restrictions on that. There's also on the West End on Brackett Street, One Joy, which has some also sort of, they're trying to make smaller one-bedroom. Some have parking, some don't. And they've done a couple of those efforts up on the East End as well. So to definitely look out for that.
An email from Matthew. Have you already discussed FHA 203K or USDA rural development loans? I recently purchased my first home, a fixer-upper in Deer Isle. I managed to qualify for a 203K loan, which enabled me to buy a home that otherwise had been overlooked due to its disrepair. It is an involved and lengthy process, but preferable to me over new construction. 3.5% down payment and decent income requirements. Any local banks specialize in this?
I wouldn't say specialize, but we definitely do have that product, and there are a lot of other lenders that do as well. He's absolutely right in saying that it is a very complicated and lengthy process to go through, but quite rewarding when you get to the end of it. You just have to be willing to know that as a home buyer, you're going to have to do a lot of work to get yourself there.
So, you know, he brings up a program that I'd never heard of, and probably a lot of people in the audience haven't. Mary, if somebody comes to their community bank and says, I really want to try to figure out a way to be a homeowner and I don't even know where to start, will a specialist work with them to find if something like this is appropriate for the home that they're buying or want to buy?
Absolutely. That's definitely something that you have to do. You have to sit down with the client and find out exactly what their needs are, where they are now, and then go through the different products that you offer and determine which ones are the best for them. Banks have a bit of a onus to do this through the Community Reinvestment Act, where we're required to make investments back into our community for low and moderate income borrowers and in low and moderate income neighborhoods in exchange for the fact that we're taking in deposits from our clients. So we need to lend that money back out into the community.
So are you advocating for people maybe to change the order a little bit? I know a lot of people get a realtor, go look for a home, find something they love, and then go to the bank and see if they qualify for a mortgage. Would you recommend somebody coming to the bank first and saying, I'm interested in trying to do this. here's my situation. How should I think about this?
I think from the product perspective, the bank is a really great place to start. We do things like pulling the customer's credit history. They can talk to Aaron, and Aaron can say, how is your credit history? But until you really see it, you're not sure exactly whether or not they're going to qualify. But in the ideal world, it's a partnership. It's the bank saying, here's what we think you can afford, and here's the programs that we think are best for you. And then you need to talk to someone like Aaron to decide, where can we find that?
I have a lot of clients who are in a multi-year process. So they came to me, talked to me. We went to somebody to get them pre-approved to a local bank or local mortgage broker. And then they find out, really, it's going to take a year to get their credit to the place where they need to get it to. We want to watch the market over time and see our prices going up or our prices going to flatten and maybe even go down. So it's really watching and waiting and being really wise about when you choose to get into the market. And it could even be a multi-year process.
Sean on Facebook says, after going through a tough divorce, my credit was trashed. Are there any places that can help with a VA loan or other options for credit in the 500s?
So credit scores are extremely important when you're looking for a mortgage loan. And typically, most lenders aren't able to help someone if your score is below 600. But that's where Aaron's talking about, a multi-year process where you sit with someone who actually looks at your credit history and gives you specific steps to take to increase that number.
All right. Well, thank you all. I know the conversation was a little disjointed, but I think it's because in Maine, the situation's different in different communities, and so many different people face different challenges in finding affordable housing. I really appreciate you being here. Denise Lord, Senior Director of Communications and Planning with Maine State Housing Authority, Mary Miller, Vice President with Androscoggin Bank, and Aaron Oldham, a realtor with Vitalius Real Estate Group. Nikki Shields ran the board today. You can find past editions of Maine Calling at mainecalling.org. Today's show will be broadcast again at 8. Maine Calling is produced by Jonathan Smith and Cindy Hahn. I'm Jennifer Rooks, and you've been listening to Maine Calling on Maine Public Radio.